To show you.
The funny thing is, and I didn't even know what a throat goat meant. I was just going with it. I was like, oh, that's funny, throat goat. I'm like, oh, no, it's an actual thing. Oh, throat goat. Oh, so I looked it up. I looked up what throat goat means, and I was like, oh.
You didn't know?
He looked it up, and 2 hours later, he was just like, okay, now I'm good. Now I'm good.
I was like Quagmire in that one meme when he comes out, and he's got one arm bigger than the other.
You're like, so I know what throat goat is, and I have a very good understanding of that.
It's like, everybody, I have seen the light.
Jesus Christ. Okay, let's go ahead and get started on that note, please.
Yes.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Horrible Peoples Podcast. I'm your host, Alex Webster. With me, as always, is Anthony Fuentes.
Hey-ho-hoo.
And joining us this week, as always, Throat Goat Philosophy.
I'm just going to repeat what Fuen just did for his intro.
Wahoo!
I'm not at all tired to the point of delirium. I am fine.
Anthony's had a week. I've had a week. Phil, I don't know how Phil's doing. I feel like I haven't spoken to you in a minute.
I know.
I miss you, Phil.
If you're not hearing from me, that means shit's going on. Shit's hitting the fan.
Oh no!
It's like it can only be bad news because I do not stop.
Yeah.
Earlier he was quiet and I thought his mic disconnected and he's like, no, I'm here. And then I was just like, I thought he disconnected because he is never quiet. So like,
no, I'm just here rethinking my life, ma'am. It is okay.
Yeah. When you're producing, when producing a short film, like so many ideas just start popping up. Like it's go time for like the creative juices to start floating, I guess. And that's exactly what's going on. Sometimes I trill off in a conversation. I feel so bad for Savannah sometimes because we'll be having a conversation and I'll be like, oh, hey, but what about this? And then, But anyways.
Anyway, just like Tulu. You did just now, trailing off in the conversation.
It's exactly what happened. You see?
Let's dive right in, no pun intended, to...
That was intended.
That was totally pun intended. Stop.
To this week's episode, we were talking about Underwater from 2020. This poor movie.
What a year to release this movie.
I know. This poor fucking movie never stood a fucking chance.
Very interested to hear.
Thoughts? Well, you know what? Why don't you go ahead and introduce this bitch, Phil?
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. I get to read the IMDb synopsis. Here we
go. Yes, you do.
All right. Here it is. A crew of oceanic researchers working for a deep-sea drilling company try to get to safety after a mysterious earthquake devastates their deep-water research and drilling facility located at the bottom of the Mariana Trench, baby.
But Phil, it's Monster May. An earthquake? What could possibly be going on?
Well, that earthquake can just cause the Monster May. He did the Monster May. The Monster May. He did the Monster May. The earthquake caused a Monster May, dude.
That's okay.
I'm going to have to give that IMDb synopsis rating, I would say, a 6.5, 7 out of 10.
I'm giving it a 5. It's a really long sentence, and there's too many D words. Deep water drilling, devastates their deep water research drilling, blah, 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 blah.
That's true. That's a really good point. Lots of drilling.
Deep sea drilling company devastates deep water research drilling facility.
Did they mention that it's deep underwater?
And there's drilling?
I had to take a second breath reading that long ass sentence.
There's not a comma to be seen, dude.
All right, 5. I'm with the Webster 5.
I'm a lower mine. I'm going to 5. All right, anyways, Underwater is directed by William Eubank.
William Eubank.
Eubank. And screenplay by Brian Duffold and Adam Kozad. And it's produced by Peter Shernan, Tanya Davis, and Jeno Topping. And it stars Geno Topping. That sounds like a really good. I'm just gonna skip that one. That's a. I was gonna say there's a pizza joke right there, but it's too cringe even for me.
I was gonna say that's a weak. That's an easy joke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cheap bait.
Yeah. I know. I'm just gonna skip right over. Let's go to the cast, shall we?
Sure.
This Underwater stars Kristen Stewart, Vincent Cassel, who I fucking love. This France's gem, by the way.
Oh yeah, Vincent Cassel.
Yep. Jessica Henwick, John Gallagher Jr., Mamadou Athi?
Sure.
Yeah. And TJ Miller.
Boo. Boo hey, this man.
Hey, what's going on? My name's TJ Miller.
Shut
up. Hey, man, we should just call you Deadpool. How about that?
Ew.
The box office for this. This was released on January 20th. 2020, glorious year, 2020. Ooh. The budget for this was $80 million, and the box office return was only 41 million smackaroos.
Yeah,
that's
dude.
Not good.
That hurts. Damn, doesn't that hurt to read?
Oh, dude, that fucking hurt right now. Dude, damn. So, did anybody see this in theaters? Or, I mean, like, theaters are still open in January 2020, right?
Yeah, but it was very much like, I mean, we'll get into it, but this movie, it came out in January. No one wanted to see shit in January.
Yeah,
that's usually dumping grounds.
Yeah.
Deep dumping grounds.
Yeah, you're actually going to talk about that, Anthony.
Oh, fun times. Fun. What are you going to talk about, Alex, huh?
Megalohydrothalassophobia.
That's a damn good read. That's a damn good read. Holy shit.
Can you say it one more time? That's actually pretty satisfying. Say it one more time, please.
Megalohydrothalassophobia.
Oh, I thought you were going to go, Mufasa.
Ooh, do it again.
Now, there's no point dancing around it. Underwater is essentially alien, well, underwater, right? And at some point, it decided to take a sharp turn into Lovecraft territory, but we'll get into it.
Mm-hmm.
Underwater touches on isolation horror, much like The Thing, Lovecraftian horror, much like The Endless, and ocean horror. And both of those previous movies we have covered here on the Horrible People's podcast. Go check them out.
Mm-hmm.
This movie relies on what many people have, maybe less so in our home base of Southern California, but a common fear nonetheless, the fear of the ocean itself, or more specifically, the fear of what is lying underneath the waves.
As a Californian, I will say, fear is still very relevant.
Hell yeah.
For some of us.
I can heavily vouch for this one. Shit.
I know.
I don't like pools. I don't, just bodies of water, keep me away.
Sorry, guys, I was taking a drink. I thought you were going to be talking more.
No. Keep going.
I'm like, wow, you just leave us in the fucking dust there, Webster.
I mean, I did mention...
In the deep end, so to speak.
Oh, wow. I mean, I did mention in the Deep Blue Sea episode that like I have this unconventional fear that there's a fucking shark in a man-made concrete pool.
Man,
so,
your unrealistic fear of... Yep. Yeah, I get it.
No, watching this movie was definitely... a chore, for sure.
Oh, no!
So, yeah, we'll get all into that right now.
Oh,
so,
thalassophobia... Okay. Interesting. So, thalassophobia is the proper name for the fear of large bodies of water, including large lakes, and this is an incredibly common fear, noted considering that 2/3 of the podcast has this fear. It is thought that this fear of large bodies of water is actually an evolutionary and ancestral trait passed on from generation to generation. So I'm just missing an ancestral trait, guys. That's all. It's just me being a white person.
I was about to say, you got two browns here, and we're not water people at all, despite my webbed hands.
You little frog.
I know. And my family's from the village side, like the coastal village area. So, you know, I should not fear this shit, but, well, whatever.
Yet. In a 2016 study, it's established that the, quote, fear of the unknown is an evolutionary mechanism that has driven the survival of the human race since the very beginning. So, you guys are just holding on to that, you know, our tadpole brains.
Yep.
They're tadpole brain. That's why we've made it this far, okay? We're good.
Hey, no hate. I just, you know, I'm just a huge lover of the ocean, so. So showing
San Diego brain right there.
Woo!
Yep.
Yep.
Absolutely.
I surf to work.
Oh god.
So showing fear towards deep bodies of water is pretty much justified, since ancestors to the human race understood that their survival was reliant on remaining on solid land and not aquatic environments. We don't have gills for a fucking reason, basically.
Unless you're Kevin Costner.
Unless you are that fish person from Shape of Water.
Yeah. I was going to say Ape Sapien. That's really cool.
Ape Sapien. Yeah. Also,
his long-lost cousin.
Long-lost cousin. Our movie this week, however, focuses on megalohydrothalassophobia, or the fear of large objects in water. This could be anything from underwater shipwrecks to Cthulhu. Megalohydrothalassophobia can be differentiated from thalassophobia itself. While they are similar, they're not the same. Megalohydrothalassophobia specifically refers to the fear of large objects in large bodies of water, while thalassophobia can refer to a broader fear of the ocean, including its depth or vastness. That's your lesson in phobias today, guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
you're just speaking all, ooh, this all called out to me.
If you're talking about shipwrecks specifically, by the way, then you've got submechnophobia. And so, yeah, there are a lot of ways to be afraid of the ocean.
You're triggered watching the Titanic. You're like, nope. Well, I don't care if they fucking love each other.
That's the thing. It's like people, like, they're the focus of their fear is on, like, shipwrecks. Like, so seeing, like, something underwater that shouldn't be there. That's, like, what their fear comes from. Something unnatural in the water.
Okay, that makes sense.
I'm sure you guys have seen it. Someone put, like, a Jason statue at the bottom of a lake somewhere. Yeah. And, like, that freaked out a bunch of people for obvious reasons, but, like, that would, like, trigger someone with some submechnophobia. So,
yeah. Okay. No.
That would trigger a lot of people. It's Jason Voorhees, baby.
I know, right? Underwater also uniquely focuses on the claustrophobic nature of the ocean, with tight shots and fast camera work, banking on all of us having some discomfort with either the ocean or the monsters that lie below. And I realized that as I was watching it, I was just like, oh, I'm going to be making my friends uncomfortable.
Oh, no. I wish I could have recorded myself watching this.
Really?
And showing you the video.
Oh,
yeah, because
no.
This was a tough watch for me, man. We'll get into it. Yeah.
Okay.
We'll
yeah. Yeah.
Coming up.
So that being said, I'm sure you've heard me say megalohydrothalassophobia enough now.
Ooh, Mufasa.
Mufasa. On to production.
Oh, shit. That is me. So let's fucking do it. Do. Production kicked off in early 2017. It was announced that Kristen Stewart would star in the film. Shortly after, fucking T.J. Miller and Jessica Henwick joined the cast. And principal production was set to commence later that month in good old New Orleans.
New Orleans.
NOLA.
Charbroiled oysters, baby. Ooh. Ooh, bring that from the deep ocean. That's some good shit.
I was just going to say.
You just eat everything from the ocean?
Yeah, I don't want to be there, but if you bring it on land, I'm down. I'm with that shit. Yeah. So, during filming, Vincent Cassell and Mamadou Anthy, John Gallagher Jr. were added to, of course, the cast. Now, underwater scenes with the actors in diving suits were achieved by filming on dark stages with no lights and by using volumetric scanning. Ooh, sophisticated, okay. This involved letting the effects team measure the approximate density for which the underwater should be, or which the water should be moving around them. So, they didn't just toss them in there. That's good. none of these guys are James Cameron, please. In those underwater scenes, actors wore airtight suits, making it difficult to hear the director's commands once they were sealed.
Whoops.
again, not James Cameron. On top of that, each suit weighed about 140 pounds.
Jeez.
That's more than me. Oh Lord.
Man, really?
Yeah.
It's like carrying a Fwenster.
That's just one of me latched onto their back, like, okay,
oh
cool. You can't hear nothing. You can just hold their ears.
Talk about extra baggage.
Oof.
After shooting the film, the director decided to design the alpha creature based on H.P. Lovecraft's mythos, as it features Cthulhu as the monster. Spoiler fucking alert.
It's Anyways. Cthulhu. It's a monster. It's Monster May, motherfuckers.
It's one of the monsters.
It's so funny that every time you Webster, can I just say this? Every time you say a certain thing in a certain way, in a certain tone of voice, I cannot help but hear your world-famous Jerry Seinfeld impression. What is it with this Cthulhu?
It's Cthulhu. What is the deal with Cthulhu? It's an unseen horror. It's a huge fucking monster. What is the deal with that?
I literally heard it when you first said Cthulhu. I just couldn't help but reference your Jerry Seinfeld impression.
Oh my god, am I gonna be my world famous Jerry Seinfeld impression.
But it has to be organically come out. Like it's just you can't think about it and then we're like, she's going full Jerry again.
I never go full Jerry.
Jesus Christ. Okay.
Well, when asked what he thinks, quote, makes a good monster in his mind, Eubank, director, suggests the ideal monster should represent, quote, something big in the story, something important, something having to do with the character. That's almost Jerry. I want Jerry right there. Something big in the story, something important, something having to do with the character. Every quote, we do that this whole fucking episode. I don't care anymore.
This episode right here. I don't know what number this episode is, but if you can just take everything, episode
220.
Episode 220 out of context. Jerry Seinfeld, water, and throat goats.
Hey, that's our second throat goat of the season, too, so way to go. Oh, wow. Anyway, what happened with Underwater, and why was it done so very dirty? Why did that happen? Well, after Disney acquired 20th Century Fox in 2019, they quickly need to start putting out good old movies. Oh, no, this is going to be some corporate bullshit. I already know it. Mm-hmm. Anyways, Underwater was actually filmed all the way back in 2017, but was shelved by 20th Century and then unearthed by Disney in 2019 after the merger, and was slotted for, again, very dreaded January release of 2020. Back then, you did not release movies in January. Here you go, yeah. January movies are typically reserved for what people consider very bad. So when Underwater was slated for, of course, that very same January release, people were not very enthused. And of course, while January is often considered bad for a new release, although there are the occasional hits, audiences who are looking to catch up on big awards potentials tend to be in luck, as January is when those movies expand to wide release or streaming, leaving movie theaters really fucking empty. What was the Oscar movies for 2020? There was some good ones, if I remember correctly.
I think Parasite.
Parasite
was the winner.
That was the year that you had an Oscar watching party, and we just
Oh my god.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember that one. That was, what a time. Jesus
what
Christ.
A time.
Yeah, anyway, so, not to mention that Underwater released shortly before the world went to hell, which means that people were more focused on the super plague than following up on their passing interest in seeing the weird underwater monster movie with the girl from Twilight. Bigger problems, I guess.
And I'm saying that is what people were thinking, not that I think Kristen Stewart is just the girl from Twilight.
Well, she's also the girl from Adventureland, come on.
Hey.
Yeah. Adventureland.
Oh, yeah. She's also twisted. The girl from Panic Room. Excuse me.
Oh, yeah. She was in Panic Room. That's right.
She's Jodie Foster's daughter, yeah.
Wait, was she in that Chris Hemsworth Snow White? Was that her, too?
Yes.
Oh, shit. Mm. All right, well. Man, they shelved this for that many years. They had that. They could have really released this in her prime. Jesus.
Yeah.
Oh, dummies. Anyways, Underwater is the final 20th Century Fox film released under its original 1935 name, before the name was, of course, changed to 20th Century Studios by the fucking mouse after their acquisition of Fox and its assets. Except Fox News. Because they didn't want to touch that fucking potato.
I know. Disney news.
I know, right? Disney hates Mexicans.
Oh my god! Can you imagine? What's his name? The fucking dude that just got fired from Fox.
Tucker Carlson.
Talking is like, okay, so what is it the deal with a Snow White? Huh? Why does it have the last name got to be White? Huh? Is there an issue here?
Why do they hate white people?
I don't know. I think it's a great last name. but people, the woke have an issue with the last name White. They want to change it.
Here are three tweets that is proof that everyone on the left actually thinks this one hysterical thing. Could you believe
this one crazy thing that no one else thinks?
Gamora from Guardians of the Galaxy. Why is she have so much speaking roles in this? Oh, the green screen. Oh, very woke, Disney. Very woke.
Mm-hmm. You know what doesn't sound as good as Snow White? Snow Brown. This is America, baby.
Okay, you guys are scaring me.
Yeah, we're going crazy.
Yeah, we're going full Tucker. Jesus Christ. Yeah. I didn't even watch that piece of shit. Anyways.
I was going to say, all I know is he wants to fuck the green M&M. That's all I know.
He really...
Oh, wow.
Really
that, is so true.
Mm-hmm.
That is
so That's true. That's why I thought we were going with Gamora.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That was a huge coincidence. I totally forgot. Yeah, that was a thing. That was an actual thing with the green
Maybe if
M&M.
She had an M on her chest, she'd be even more of a fine lead.
She'd be a proper feminine woman.
Wow.
Anyway.
We're done with that one. Okay.
I do think that, I think it's funny that this is the very last movie ever released by 20th Century Fox.
Just how much iconic imagery they've had in cinemas for like...
Since 1935.
Yeah, almost a fucking century, just shy. And like...
This is the last one.
Mm-hmm. Our last episode of The Predator was 20th Century Fox.
Yeah.
Right. Shit. Oh, ho, ho.
Jeez. Well, that was really the last one? Wow.
This is it, man. And it was the shelved movie that they, like, forgot about and dumped in January.
Shot in 2017 also? Wow.
Put it on the shelf, and then Disney was like, this seems fine. Put it in fucking January.
Yeah, but don't put our name on it. Don't put our name on it. Just really stick it to the Murdochs here. Well, Underwater was released the same weekend as 2017 by Sam Mendes, which also circumvented the typical January formula and ultimately did poorly. But how poorly? How poorly did it do, Phil? Let us know about this fucking bomb.
First of all, did you guys see 1917?
No, I don't like war movies.
That movie fucking rules.
War movies make me feel a type of way that I don't like.
I didn't see it, but I do like Sam Mendes, so
yeah,
I feel bad for not seeing
it. It was shot by Roger Deakins.
Oh, yeah.
It's a great fucking movie. I fucking loved it. Anyways.
Maybe I feel different about war movies now, but like I remember watching some... I watched some war movie when I was like maybe a little too young, and now I'm just like, war movies freak me out. But
I mean,
that makes sense.
It's kind of the point. I get it, but yeah.
Meanwhile, like
people receive things differently.
Meanwhile, I'm receiving
this throat goat a lot differently.
Oh. Meanwhile, I'm just with like horror movies. I'm just like more blood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
see,
ooh,
there you go.
That's some good stabbing, baby.
When you know your typical normie would be like, oh my god, what is going on? And Boogeyman. Oh, Boogeyman. I saw Boogeyman. That's right. We'll talk about that one later.
To be fair, though, real quick on war movies, me and Phil's generation did play the PlayStation Medal of Honor, which had FPS going through D-Day. So we naturally just... Yeah. That's why you got thousands of people on Call of Duty right there.
I remember playing... It was on PS2, right? Medal of Honor?
There was one on PS2 also.
It was straight up like Saving Private Ryan.
It was exactly that. Yeah.
It was like storming the, what is it, Normandy or?
Normandy. Beaches Normandy. Yeah. D-Day, baby.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, D-Day. Mm-hmm. Anyways.
Yeah.
let's talk about the release and reception of Underwater here, shall we?
Yes.
Underwater grossed $17.3 million in the United States and Canada. And $23.7 million in other territories for a worldwide total of, drum roll please, $41 million.
Ooh, that's rough.
I thought that was just domestic. That's world... Ooh.
Yep.
Let's see what Rotten Tomatoes has to say, shall we? On good old Rotten Tomatoes, the film has an approval rating of 47% based on 218 reviews, with an average rating of 5.3 out of 10. The site's critical. I know, right? Honestly, I thought it was going to be a little higher than this, but all right, we'll see.
Well, you just went on a thing about Rotten Tomatoes, so.
What?
Phil, you just went on a... You recently went on a not a rant, but you made a good...
A diatribe
about Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, that's right. Yes, yes.
He's like, yeah. What point did I make?
Yeah, I was like, well, I make a lot of points. No, I'm joking. So,
to be fair, if you do this podcast long enough, we forget our opinions all the fucking time.
Yeah, I think I'm starting to get that symptom.
We're like, we haven't talked about that movie? It's a lot.
Sometimes you'll contradict yourself and then feel like an idiot.
Yeah. Sometimes your opinion also even like change a little bit. And like,
what?
Yeah.
What do you mean? People aren't like this like consistent, infallible part. Like,
yeah.
No way.
We still got to do that episode with our updated opinions on certain movies that we've talked about pretty consistently. Mm. So,
Oh, yeah. By the way, the point that I made was too: don't let a Rotten Tomato score prevent you from seeing a movie. That was my thing. So,
January 2020 audience did not listen to your point at all.
Yeah, they did.
They definitely didn't see this one.
Yeah, but sometimes, but to be fair to Rotten Tomatoes, yeah, sometimes, you know, their things will be valid. But A Knight's Tale is at 49% and is rotten.
That's crazy.
Anyways,
yeah, fuck that. So,
anyways, where was I? The site's critical consensus reads, quote, "Underwater's strong cast and stylish direction aren't enough to distract from the strong sense of deja vu provoked by this claustrophobic thriller's derivative story," end quote.
Okay, so I didn't read this outline at all, but my one opinion that I was in my head the entire time was the word derivative.
Derivative.
The most derivative movie we've probably ever covered. I just say that out loud before I get into my opinion later on.
Yeah.
Derivative, yes. Yeah. But keep going.
Yeah. And our boy, Owen Gleiberman.
Fucking Gleiberman.
Gleiberman!
He says, "Underwater is a stupefying entertainment in which every claustrophobic space and apocalyptic crash of water registers as a slick visual trigger. Yet, it's all built on top of a dramatic void. It's boredom and sensorround."
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Gleiberman.
Yeah. "It was pretty much impossible to find critics who enjoyed this movie. However, online YouTube commentators like FoundFlix and Chris Stuckman praised the film for being a fun original and if not heavily derived from the classics and well-shot monster movie."
It was well shot.
I really do like the inside the helmet shots, the wide lenses that they use inside.
Those
definitely feel the claustrophobia in there for sure. But what about the voice of the people? Let's go on to Letterboxd, baby.
I thought you were going to do the Bane voice for that one.
Time to go mobile. Letterboxd reviews. What about the voice of the people? But what about the voice of the people? Let's find out. On the Letterboxd Underwater...
No, I'm not going to do that. Letterboxd. On Letterboxd, Underwater has a 2.9 average rating out of 96,000 reviews.
How is this also an Alex Webster special? God damn.
It's an Alex Webster special.
It sure is.
Middling reviews with high amount of them.
It's an Alex Webster special.
It sure is. Let's see. Emily Rugburn with 3 stars says... If the closest I can get to Kristen Stewart is being eaten by a squid monster, she's about to battle, then ding, 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 come on and get the din, din, you slippery bitch. Wow. That's good.
That was a good one. All right.
That's good.
Fucking Rugburn.
Yeah, Rugburn. I love that name. Jack with 2.5 stars says, TJ Miller's death scene. Ah, so satisfying. Heart emoji.
Yeah, I agree.
Now I remember. I was like, wait, how did he die? And I just remembered.
Painfully.
The man, Doug, with 3 stars, says, "While I love how the film just gets right into the action, it never slows down enough to build the characters or develop them through the action. This makes the film ironically come off as just shallow. What is done well is transposing an alien knockoff to unearthly depths of the sea. The design of the stations and suits are wonderful, even if the creature design isn't. The shift from Alien to Lovecraft is cool in a batshit crazy way. It's a fun 90-ish minutes, end quote. Okay. I heavily agree with this one.
Yes, for 2.5 stars, yes, big agree.
Yes. Yeah, I thought the suits were cool. They looked very Hideo Kojima.
Mm. They did. That's
and,
true.
Yeah, and yeah, dude, the lack of character development, the design of the stations were cool, and the monsters reminded me a lot of, yeah, they were obviously like CG, but they reminded me so much of like the monsters or zombies from I Am Legend, but just underwater.
Hmm.
You know? That's a good point. All right.
Yeah, the Lovecraft stuff was cool. It was cool to see the boy Cthulhu.
Oh, it's pronounced Cthulhu. You didn't sign.
But yeah, it was cool. So let's go. But finally, Just Jez with 2.5 stars says, "I was expecting Wet Alien and got Soggy Event Horizon." Yeah. That's pretty good.
Okay. That's good. Reviews this round, Webster. Yeah, I like them.
Thank you. And also all of like the 2.9 was very much very accurate to the reviews that I found. Like I went to like recent reviews, I went to popular reviews, and pretty much all of them were like 2, 2.5, 3. Like it wasn't like very, it was pretty consistent across the board.
Yeah. It's not like a love it or hate it. It's like a kind of like it, kind of don't like it.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't like other Alex Webster specials where it was very like divisive, where it's either like I fucking love it or I fucking hate it. It's more just like
Yeah, when that's it, true.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Flynn.
No, go for it. I was just going to comment on
that. When it comes to watching a movie I've never seen before, watching it at home for the very first time, I have this very strict rule where I do not pull out my phone. And I pulled out my phone like twice in the middle of this movie.
Damn. It's a 90-minute movie.
I know. I literally, like, that's been like an ongoing thing for me since, I don't know, since like pandemic started. Like, it was like, you know, like, nope, put the phone away, put it in another room. You're not answering shit. Pretend like you're in the movies. Don't pull out your phone. And yeah, for this one, I couldn't resist, man. I pulled it out like twice.
Damn.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. For bullshit, too. I went like on Instagram for like 2 seconds, and yeah, it was no. Yeah. So anyways, while the movie doesn't reinvent the wheel, it doesn't have to. The surprise Lovecraftian elements, special effects, and breakneck pacing make it really generally enjoyable watch for horror fans. It's a movie that wasn't made or meant to be released in January, and that ultimately led to a poor box office performance. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Boo.
Yeah. As somebody, like, I will say this. As somebody who has a phobia of, like, deep water and sharks and sea creatures in general, yeah, there are some parts where I'm just like, fuck, dude, I'm gonna cover my eyes. Like, I'm trying not to.
Oh, no.
Like, I broke, like, I have, like, one finger, but, like, I can still see through my fingers. Like, I open up, like, a little gap where I could still see. Like, I was literally like that. And I was like, fuck, this, I will give it that. There is scenes where I'm just like, oh, fuck, this is creepy, man. Oh, fuck, come on, just scare me already. Just pop up. Something pop up already. And then, yeah, dude. And then when the Cthulhu was, like, you know, revealed, I was like, oh fuck, that's fucking terrifying. Like, yeah, dude, can you imagine just like standing there and you got like the 600-foot fucking monster just looking at you like that in the deep ocean? That's scary shit for me.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely. So, all right, so let's dive into the plot a little bit. Again, completely unintentional to say dive in. It really just keeps happening.
No, it works. It works completely well.
It works for this. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, in the year 2050, the Kepler 822, a research and drilling facility operated by Tian Industries, at the bottom of the Mariana Trench, is struck by what is assumed to be a strong earthquake. And this is a really, I personally really like this opening shot.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
With Kristen Stewart.
Yeah,
with Kristen Stewart.
The restroom.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you guys You guys want to know how I found out what the Mariana Trench is?
This movie?
Yeah, no. I first learned about the Mariana Trench through Michael Bay's cinematic masterpiece known as Transformers, the first one.
Oh, shit, really? I thought you were going to say The Abyss, which...
No, that's where the Mariana Trench is where they dumped Megatron's body at the end of Transformers.
That is.
Oh, it is.
It is, right before you get some sick Linkin Park.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I think it was John Voight's voiceover. He's like, the Decepticons' bodies will be discarded in the Mariana Trench, the deepest part of our planet, 7 miles deep, or something like that.
Seven miles below the ocean.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah.
They should have played Linkin Park over the fucking headlines at the back of this movie, dude. That would have been some shit.
That would have helped out box office performance.
Oh, yeah. Or I think the "I Tried So Hard" song would be more apt for the movie of this one.
At the end,
it doesn't even matter.
Oh, leave anyway, this movie alone. God.
Oh, as part of the facility is destroyed by the incident, that being the earthquake, mechanical engineer Nora Price and her colleagues, Rodrigo and Paul, make their way to the escape pod bay. What could possibly go wrong?
Paul is played by T.J. Miller, and the first thing he does is call Kristen Stewart a flat-chested elven creature, and I immediately want to punch him in the face.
Yeah. Yeah.
Again, that's... In 2017, may have worked. I think around 2020, people were a little sick of T.J. A little bit.
Yeah.
I just never really liked him. To be dead honest with you guys...
Are you going to be dead
honest?
I
have no idea. I have no idea, like, why he's, like, canceled or shadow banned from society or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really care, because I never really liked the guy to begin with. So, yeah, I don't... I know, he's, like, banned or some shit from, like...
Well, he had a big head injury.
I have no idea.
So, yeah, he had a big head injury, started acting out a little bit from there, unfortunately.
Okay. Yeah, he, like, said some transphobic stuff in the past. He had some sexual assault allegations.
Oh, yeah. Shit. Okay.
So...
That'll do it, yeah.
That'll do it, yeah.
That'll do it right there.
Like, a lot of work misconduct issues.
So the dude fucking sucks.
He's not a great guy by the sound of it. Yeah. And
I just never, like, I don't know anything about his personal shit. I really never really cared. But, like, I just, you ever have, like, those actors where you're just like, I don't like that fucking dude.
Yes.
Oh, plenty. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, you don't know. They could be the nice person out behind the cameras. In this case, he wasn't. But, like, you know, like...
Oh, no. I think a lot of people, most people probably have, like, an actor, or more than a few, or that, like, they have no reason to dislike them. They just fucking hate them.
Yeah. The actor is, like, a genuine ick for them, just by existing.
The actor's an ick, yeah.
I just had, like, I just had this gut feeling with him for all these years, and... Apparently, my gut was correct. However, the three discover that all of the escape pods have already been deployed with Captain Lucien being the only person in the area when the three arrives. Dude,
what a good fucking captain.
What a captain. Yeah. Like, he was like, all right, dude, my crew's out of here. And I am about to die with this sinking ship. And I'm like, oh, fuck, dude, here comes three more. Fuck.
I'll wait to leave, then I'll die. Yeah. I'll wait till they go, then I'll die.
Yeah.
Together, they reach a control base and find biologist Emily Haversham and an engineer Liam Smith, who are unsuccessful in their attempts to make contact with the surface. Mm-hmm. Liam Smith is played by John Gallagher Jr., who I love. And I think... the reason I watched this movie in the first place is because he was in it.
Oh, there you go. See? Okay. You got yourself a podcast episode there. Hey.
There you go.
Well, Lucien suggests using pressurized suits to walk 1 mile across the ocean floor Roebuck 60... Roebuck?
Yeah.
641 in the hope of resurfacing from that particular vessel. As they descend in a freight elevator, Rodrigo's defective helmet implodes under the water pressure. This is the one scene above all the scenes that fucking freaked me out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the cracks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, when his helmet just starts cracking a little bit, yeah, you're like, no, this is not. It's not going to be good.
That sucked for him, dude. Like, he was just like, all right, we're going to do this. Let's fucking go. And then.
Well, and earlier he kind of knew that the helmet was defective, but I think he thought it would be okay.
Yeah, bad character decision right there, but it's fine.
Now is not the time to for just okay. You want fucking optimum.
Yep. I can make a mile on this.
Of course, the surviving crew sees a distress beacon from one of the escape pods below, and Smith and Paul go to investigate. And of course, as they arrive at the location, they find a body in the rubble.
This is because what could go wrong? A creature emerges from the corpse's back and attacks. Smith kills the creature and takes it inside. Again, great decision making. Mm-hmm. Haversham examines the creature and realizes that it belongs to a previously undiscovered species.
Oh, I understand the alien references here, but like, holy shit, even Prometheus too. Like, fuck, they did the same shit 10 years ago or 10 years prior to this movie.
Yeah, wait, Prometheus was... You're right. It was like 2011? Yeah. 12?
I can't remember. I think Prometheus was 2012.
Okay, five years.
It was 2012, yeah.
I mean, would have been fine, again, had it released on time, but you know?
Had it not released in January.
Yeah.
Definitely. Well, the five make their way to the sea floor, but as they are walking... Kepler explodes above and nearly buries them in the debris. Smith is hit, but Price and Lucien save his ass. So, way to go.
Not his oxygen, whatever. The scrubber, whatever they called it. Oh, no.
So, they manage to get through an access tunnel to an intermediate station, where they can charge and clean their suits. However, they find that Smith's oxygen scrubber is badly damaged from the debris.
Yep, oxygen scrubber. God damn it. Now he can't breathe underwater.
Shit.
Whatever are they going to do? How convenient.
Crisis. It's more crises. Crises. On their way through the access tunnel, Paul is attacked by an unknown creature. Oh, no. And is dragged underwater and killed. Oh no, my favorite character.
Where's the levity gonna be now?
Where's the comic relief? Where is it? So before the team leaves the access tunnel, they find that Smith's damaged oxygen pod will cause him to suffocate from the explosion's toxic fumes. He's gonna breathe toxic air.
Oh great. Gosh.
Great. He's gonna turn into that dude in RoboCop.
Help me!
That's pretty much what he did do in this movie.
Yep.
Well, unwilling to leave another crew member behind, Price, Lucien, and Haversham agreed to help Smith walk. The four set off across the ocean floor, but a humanoid creature appears and drags Smith into a cave, which again another very claustrophobic scene actually. So this gave me some Descent vibes a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, and of course Lucien manages to get Smith out, but himself is pulled from the other three. Price is dragged along with Lucien, but Lucien sacrifices himself to spare Price from the increasing difference in pressure. What a fucking captain, dude.
He goes down with his crew, or his ship, or whatever.
Mm-hmm. And it seemed totally not ripped off from gravity. Not ripped off from gravity at all. It's underwater.
Lucien always reminded, I don't know if you guys follow this hip-hop artist, like, he's been in the game for like 30 years, but his name is Slug, but he's part of a group called Atmosphere. And there's this song called God Loves Ugly, and it opens up with, I live life like the ring, I wear the scars like the rings on a pimp, I live life like the captain of a sinking ship. And Lucien reminds me so much of that verse. I don't know why I shared that, but it's just one of those random thoughts that popped in my head while watching this movie.
He's having a creative moment.
Well, there you go.
Oh, fuck. Wow. I think I just did. I'm running that shit down, though. Yeah.
Do it.
Gotta. Anyway, so Price ends up at the abandoned Shepherd station alone and is able to change her damaged diving suit before continuing toward the towards Roebuck.
So, walking along the ocean floor, she reunites with Havisham and Smith and proceeds to help drag Smith. So we get climax time, baby.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I'm all about that climax, baby. And as they enter Roebuck, they encounter a nest of the humanoid creatures hanging from the ceiling and try to sneak by. But the sound of Havisham's oxygen alarm wakes the creatures. That part is pretty gnarly.
I love how you were like, I'm into climaxing, as they enter Roebuck.
I was thinking that too, fun.
Yeah, I was like,
oh, wait, hang on, stop, I'm about to Roebuck.
God dang it.
Oh my god.
Oh, god, and Havisham all over myself.
Oh my god, that's too good.
Read the next line, Alex.
Ridiculous. Price is partially swallowed by one of the creatures, but is able to kill it and free herself.
Swallowed.
Stop it. I knew it. I had a feeling.
Is swallowed. The three manage to reach the escape pod bay, but Price discovers that only two of the pods are functional.
Functional. we're just Beavis and Butthead now.
I know, right? Price and Havisham manage to get the ailing Smith into a pod, and Price persuades Havisham to take the last one.
Stop.
Wherever you are. That's pretty much what's going on here.
Yeah. Oh, that's so funny.
Jack.
You just go on, Rose, okay? You just go on.
Jack, there's another boat. Jack, there's another pod. Jack.
I was thinking more R.I.P. like Armageddon, Jack. When he pulls off the passion and he kicks.
Oh, yeah. Him. It is
oh,
that.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you're gonna tell Smith for me. Like, what?
You know what I was thinking too? Those pods, I mean, the pods were pretty small, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But holy shit, I mean, like, look, this is just me being a little perverted here. But like, Kristen Stewart could totally have just, like, they could have faced each other and she could have just sat on her lap. And, like, you know, they could have fit. They could, two people could totally fit in that pod.
I think they addressed that in the movie.
Oh, did really? They?
They did. They were just just said something about it being too heavy for two people.
Oh. Or two right, people would fine. Make it too heavy.
Yeah.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
Guess.
Okay. All
right, I guess.
One throwaway line, it's fine. It's fine.
Sure. For a movie that's got a 600-foot monster, yeah, I guess.
Sure, whatever. And also, if she had gotten in the next part, it would have just ruined the whole ending.
Yeah.
That's true.
True,
very,
true.
Very true. Which we're getting to right now, yay!
Yeah, and of course, as this happens, a gigantic creature emerges and attacks the Roebuck, with the smaller creatures follow the two escape pods. The two escape Roebuck. Pods. Roebuck. Oh, God.
You oh, no.
Roebucked all over me, dude.
I'm doing it now.
Look at you.
Christ.
The creature erects itself and penetrates the Roebuck. There
ooh.
You go.
So,
Jesus Christ.
Can we just finish this, please?
No, we're almost there.
Can we just have our sham, please?
Yeah.
We're at the climax, dude.
Price, accepting her impending death, initiates an overload of the Roebuck's nuclear core, resulting in a massive explosion that kills the creatures and allows the escape pods to reach the surface.
That's just...
losing its fucking mind.
Of all the fucking lines to stop at, it's that one where it's like a massive explosion. Impending death. Overload of the Roebuck nuclear core.
Jesus.
The massive overload causing an incredible explosion.
Yeah.
That's me.
We're at the end here. So this is, of course, followed by headlines that says there are only two survivors, which implies that none of the other escape pods made it. Tan Industries refuses to be involved with the investigations into the events and prepares to expand its drilling efforts.
Damn.
They were in on it! They knew they were looking for Cthulhu!
Yep. Oh. Capitalism, yep. Baby. Capitalism.
They probably caused 9/11 also.
Yeah. They caused definitely C-9/11 here, so yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Damn it.
I kind of like that ending. I thought it was pretty cool. I was like, oh, shit. No, they were in on it the whole fucking time.
Yeah.
They're covering it up, too.
I feel like...
Conspiracy Phil woke up with this, for sure.
They're turning the frogs gay. Yep.
They're drinking the water. They're turning the frogs gay.
Phil Jones, dude.
No. Oh, my God. Phil, no. Please.
Let me tell you a little bit of something about this Cthulhu right here, okay? He's no! real. I have data. Endless amount of data that proves that Cthulhu's real, all right?
And Cthulhu's are illegally invading America.
With my tactical flashlight.
You protect yourself from the Cthulhu, Jesus.
You can
Christ.
Protect okay. yourself from Cthulhu.
They were going oddly hard on the right-wingers in this episode.
We are.
I was about to say something inflammatory, but that's okay. And moving on. Thoughts, guys. We finally made it.
We did.
Yeah,
we finally made it to the discussion section where we can quickly go through these questions, and then you guys can never talk about this movie ever again.
Well, I mean... I know we're making it sound like it sucked, but honestly, it kind of didn't. I thought it was pretty cool. I know I said that I pulled my phone out twice during watching this, but like, there were some things that I really did appreciate. The underwater scenes were pretty frightening. Walking on the sea ground, like you just see nothing but darkness and ocean debris. There's like POV shots of you just see what the light from the helmets are capturing. Like, I'm just waiting for something to pop at the screen, and I'm just, like, covering my fucking eyes, because all I just see is black, dark oceanness, and that shit's kind of scary. It's scary, but I did have a good time with it, where I'm just like, fuck, dudes, if somebody, like, I watched it alone, but if somebody were to watch me, it'd be kind of funny to see me, like, oh, fuck, dude, like,
you'd
feels,
be
like, legit kind of scared.
The entertainment.
Quivering Phil.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
I like to get quivered, Flynn.
Anthony, your thoughts.
I didn't like this one. I tried. The thing is, I appreciate that it's a very good looking movie, a lot of visual spectacle, but it tries. It tries really hard. I just don't think the script was there. It's just like these characters meant nothing to me. None of them did. None of the little emotional beats really made a difference to me. Again, kind of too derivative. In certain parts, because that gravity scene, I'm telling you, I was like, are you fucking kidding me? I don't know what it is, but there was a lot of stuff. And then, of course, maybe kill T.J. Miller sooner. Like, he just did... There was a lot of things that just didn't work for me. But I do feel like, with the concept and maybe a better script, that more character-focused, like how kind of like how Alien is... it could be good. Like, the concept's not bad. And the special effects are fantastic. Like, the monster creatures. There are scary scenes, too. There's definitely some scary bits in here. But I think there's just a lot of stuff that's... what we've seen it all before. Maybe not as pretty. But we've seen it in a lot of different ways. And, yeah, it was a tough one. I pulled my phone out a couple times also, unfortunately. Yeah. I wanted to like it more, but because I root for Kristen Stewart. I think she got like such a bad rap early on in her career from people being dicks online, essentially. And she's capable of so much more, but this definitely, I don't think, would have been a showcase for her, unfortunately.
Well,
so, yeah.
I would suggest this just to show that the girl can emote, because like so many movies that she got like typecast in were just like, okay, now don't emote and look as emotionless as humanly possible. And that's kind of what she got. She got a lot of shit for, especially with Twilight, where it was just like, oh, she can't act. Look at her face. She like isn't emoting for anything, which unfortunately was just the script, because the book was meant to have the reader project themselves onto Bella. So it was very like not a lot there.
I am like literally sad. No. I was just doing a Kristen Stewart Twilight impression. Like, I am really sad.
I am, and now I am happy.
And now I
But yeah, so I think she gets a lot of shit, but I think she's a very, very talented actor, and I agree. I think she gets a lot of undue shit.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, definitely.
So. I like, you know, since we're talking about Twilight and stuff like that, I think the same can be said for my boy Robert Pattinson. Like, if this was 15 years ago, you were to tell me that these two would grow on to become, like, you know, like they would blossom to get better roles and give out better performances and deliver better performances. I don't think I've seen a whole lot of Kristen Stewart movies per se. But I'm sure in 2023, Kristen Stewart, I'm pretty sure she's putting out bangers out there. I don't know. I don't really follow. That's one career I don't really follow. Not because of the Twilight or anything. It's just a career I just never really, I feel bad. I feel bad. I'm sure she's a talented. I still haven't seen the Princess Diana movie that she did, and I heard it was fucking great, and I heard she's great in it.
I think, I know she was, like, nominated for an Oscar for that one.
Yeah. What's it called? Spencer?
Spencer. Yeah.
So I'm just like, so I still haven't seen it. It looked great. She looked great. She looked like she fucking killed it. So I'm sure she's thriving right now as, like, a cinematic performer. You know, I'm sure she's, like, very, very
good. She was in Crimes of the Future?
Yes. She was in Crimes of the Future.
She was in there. Not too long, but she was in there. Yeah, and she was awesome. Yeah, she was definitely cool. But so it's just like, you know, they're cool. It's just, I think you guys are right. I think you guys hit all the points right here, not just about the movie, but about Kristen Stewart in general. Like, you know, she was the, you know, maybe she wasn't such a good actor back in the Twilight days, maybe. But, you know, she was young as fuck, too. So what the hell? Like, you know, people grow. People evolve. Yeah.
Well, also, it seems like she's gotten a lot pickier about the roles that she's done, especially after Twilight. Mm-hmm. Because since Underwater, she's only done 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 movies. She hasn't done a lot.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I mean, can you imagine, though? Put yourself in her position. She might have a big chip on her shoulder because she's like, fuck this. I'm not going to let these people talk about something that I'm very passionate about just because they saw one movie that I'm in. You know, she was probably like, fuck this, I'm gonna get a little more picky with my shit. I wanna be more careful. I wanted to, like, I want them to know that I'm not fucking around, you know? I'm pretty sure that's what Pattinson said. And dude, he did Good Time, and I've been following Pattinson's career for sure. And he's been phenomenal these past like 6 years. You know?
Yeah,
I agree.
Absolutely.
Especially with the Batman.
Any chance you get to talk about the Batman?
I had to throw it out there. I'm sorry. Dun, 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 dun.
Well, what'd you think of the movie, Webster?
So, I picked this movie. This was a quarantine watch for me. And I remember being very impressed by it and kind of, like, disappointed that it wasn't getting more attention. I really liked it. It definitely didn't have the rewatchability that I was hoping it was going to have. I remember, like, the feeling of when I watched it the first time, just overall being very impressed by it. And that's why I wanted to cover it. And rewatching it, I had the same experience as Phil, where, like, even though, like, it does constantly go, 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 because I don't really give a fuck about these characters, like, I did find myself, like, okay, what's going on, like, on my phone? Like, you know? So...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And maybe it's also because over the last, 3 years, my experience with these particular kinds of movies has changed a little bit. But I wasn't as impressed, but I still overall had an enjoyable time. And I think a lot of my experience with this movie was also me just, like, upset that they did this movie so dirty.
That's true, because they did it pretty goddamn dirty.
Yeah, and so overall I did really enjoy it, but it's just a movie. Like, I don't think it really, and I obviously I'm not going to talk too much shit because, like, I'm not a director, but a lot of the director's other works, Eubanks, like, this is a common criticism, like the derivative thing. It's a common criticism in his works. So I think he's just trying to find his voice as a director.
Yeah. Which, and sometimes that's so fucking difficult for not just directors, but, like, any fucking artist, like totally. Any creator out there, anybody that's doing something out there, it's so fucking difficult to find a voice. You might find success in landing jobs and gigs, but holy shit, if you're still trying to develop a style or a voice or any kind of fucking spirit or presence, you know, like it could be soul crushing for somebody.
Also, often imitation is such a common way for you to find your voice. Like, I mean, even for me with painting, like how I first got started is like I would copy other things that I painted. Like, I wouldn't like pass it off as my own, but that's kind of how I got started until I found like a style that felt like mine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then I mean, you got to think with directors too. A lot of these guys, they're fans first. Obviously making stuff that he loves, that is within the realm of something he would go out of his way to watch. But, you know, he's going through this process in the public eye as well with, like, other people who probably have the same goals. And, you know, when you go genre's hard to nail. It's really, really hard when you do a genre film to, like, make it your own. So, I mean, I applaud the journey. I think it's a great ambition. It's a very ambitious thing to do. Sometimes it doesn't hit, and, you know, and that just happens. Yeah.
Well, this actually leads to my next question. What is the line between an homage and a ripoff for you guys?
I mean, in film, an homage for me, it's like where they take, like, honestly, that's something that you can just, like, take real quick and put it right back where you found it. Mm-hmm. Like, that's, like, real quick. Like, if you're going to do an homage, I mean, you see homages is something that we see a lot. A lot of people say that film has peaked and Hollywood has run out of ideas and stuff like that. And a lot of people might agree with that. But homages is something that you just have to be really careful. I think when you're paying an homage, especially in a 90-minute flick or 120-minute script or something like that, it's got to be something brief. You know, you're in or out. You're in and you're out, you know? But if you're making an entire 2-hour fucking epic and it's literally a ripoff of something else, then that's where the negative energy from the audience is going to come from. Like, oh, what the fuck? I've seen this so many times already. This is literally Underwater Alien. This is literally Gladiator. I don't know.
This is literally Underwater Alien, or like, I've seen this movie. This is The Abyss.
For me, kind of on what Phil's point is, I think when you do an homage, I would say it still fits the context of the movie in its voice. Mm-hmm. Like, it still makes total sense, and it doesn't feel like a wink if you didn't know what was going on. Like, that's a good homage. It's almost natural, and it's brief. And then that's when you're kind of like, oh, okay, if you're in the know, you're in the know. But if you're not, you still get a great set piece or a great addition to the movie that moves the story forward. I think a lot of people who do ripoffs, it feels uncreative when they do it. Mm-hmm. And I think you can tell when there's a lack of creativity in just the way it's presented within the context of the rest of the story. Versus, like, Tarantino's very good at homages because they kind of fit the context of a Tarantino film in the stylized way he does it. He doesn't just pull straight full-on plots, and it's like, oh, and this is the entire thing for such a long stretch of the movie. It really is like a hodgepodge, if anything. But, you know, if you're in the know, you're in the know. If not, you're still very entertained. So yeah, it's a fine line.
Yeah, it's not like, I would say, like, there's this difference between, like, paying respect to another artist or another visionary and just then straight up just plagiarism, you know? Like, there's a huge difference. Like, if there's something, like, and we're talking film here, so, like, if there's a film that you, if there's a, if a filmmaker wants to pay an homage to something else, it doesn't have to be another filmmaker, maybe it could be, let's say, a theme or something like that, then, yeah, just keep it brief. You know, you're kind of just tipping your hat something, but, yeah, if you're going to do your whole movie, or if you're literally just plagiarizing, but you're just changing a couple things here and there, you know,
it's then that meme.
You're insulting your audience's intelligence with that.
It's that meme where it's just like, hey, can I copy your homework? Yeah, but you got to make it look a little different.
I remember that meme. Yeah, that was around for a while.
Yeah, basically that, but with movie, like, it's Underwater and Alien, but...
Yeah. So, I mean, like, honestly, just coming up with, I mean, I don't know how much studio interference was involved in this particular film, but that is always a case too. You can always have a producer be like, hey, I like this script, but let's turn this shit into Underwater Alien.
Let's make it more alien-like. Yeah, no, totally. And that could absolutely be the case. We don't know. I couldn't really find much about, like, the production necessarily.
Like, oh, you can't do a chestburster scene? Fine.
Fine.
We totally... Oh, wow. Kristen Stewart was in her underwear a lot, just like Sigourney Weaver was.
Yep. Yeah, again.
I'm just recognizing that right now, yeah. Which, by the way, I never found, you know, I mean, Kristen Stewart's really beautiful. She's pretty and stuff like that. But I had no complaints about Kristen Stewart in underwear. Yeah, that was nice. That was nice. Just like Sigourney Weaver, I was like, oh, okay, Kristen Stewart. Damn, you're cut, dude. You got a six-pack? I was like, okay. Yeah,
Kristen Stewart's...
It moves the story along.
Yeah, nice. Beautiful. Yeah,
she's got,
it's important.
She's got a nice belly. She's got a nice belly.
Okay, well, on that note, let's go ahead and move on. We already answered this, so I'm going to go ahead and skip it and go to the fun question. Guys, you are going to take a character from Twilight. I know for you guys it's going to be pretty much be exclusively Bella or Edward, don't worry, and put them in a survival situation. Which character, what's the situation, and how do they get out of it, if at all?
Hmm.
Character from Twilight. Yes. You know what? I'm insulted that you think I've only seen like half of a movie. I've seen three of these, honey.
Really?
Okay. Yes.
Honestly, consider me shocked.
I didn't see the last two, part one and two. What was those called?
Breaking Dawn.
Breaking Dawn. And two. Yeah, I didn't see them. I know how it ends. But I was with somebody who was obsessed with the movies at the time, and I went to the movies to go see these movies when they were out. From 2008 to when did Eclipse come out? 2010?
Oh, God, I don't know. This was so way... 2008
was Twilight.
When the movies came out, it was way after my Twilight phase.
2008 was Twilight, 2009 was New Moon, and 2010, I believe, was Eclipse. Boom. That's my fucking... I have some... Come on, man. I have some knowledge in this. Those movies sucked. I'm not going to lie. They sucked. And I know that people are trying to make
Twilight
them cool again.
2007 or 2008.
It was 2008.
Was it?
Look it up. Pull that shit up.
Pull that shit up. Pull that shit up. Okay, I was way off because of my... I was trying to... Really?
Twilight was 15 years ago, dude.
No. I thought it was earlier because I have a story that I'm going to save for a later date. But I thought it was earlier. Anyway, continue. Sorry.
Okay, so, all right. First of all right, back to the question. All right, who am I going to pick that will survive any kind of survival situation?
Any survival situation.
Ooh.
Okay, let's see. Okay, it's easy to say Jacob because the dude lives in a very nature environment already, and the dude can transform to a fucking wolf that's a lone survivor wolf. However, let's see. Okay, how about this? Give my boy Robert Pattinson. Let's go with the main character. Fucking, what's his name? Oh my God. Oh my
Edward.
God. What's his name? Edward. Edward. Let's have him survive the Blood Raven blade.
Okay.
That's a good one.
Okay.
I mean, like, look, Edward has had a rough week with Bella, and is like, and this is already vampire Bella. She's already fully transformed. They already have a kid. Yeah. Jacob is, you know,
spoiler
taking care
alert,
of babysitting. They've had 15 years to watch these movies.
I'm kidding. I'm totally fine.
So, Jacob's babysitting the baby, right? Which, be careful with Jacob watching a baby, because apparently he's fucking in love with an infant, so, creeper! Anyways, I know there's a whole thing behind it, I know. So, anyways, Bella and Edward, you know, they want a date night. Hey, it's like, hey, Bella, I heard about this rave going on downtown, do you want to come with me or not? And then Bella's be like, Edward, let's fucking go. They sound like the same fucking person. So like they go to this they go downtown, and they just hear the bouncer's like, hey, how you doing? It's like, all right, let's see your fangs. Okay, cool, you're good. Get in there, get in there. Okay, cool. And then they're inside the rave. And then out of nowhere, the DJ just says, hey, it's a fucking blood rave. Launches the fucking blood. Dude, they're just having a good time. They even ran into Deacon Frost and was like, who's that guy? And then Edward's like, oh, some fucking asshole. I know who he is. But whatever. Let's just mind our own business. They're fucking dancing, having a good time, dude. All of a sudden, this chick brings in a fucking live human, and all the fucking vampires are like, whoa, what is that? Even Bella and Edward smell him. They're just like, do you smell that? And then Bella's like, hell yeah, I do. There's a fucking human in here. But they're still dancing. They're minding their own business. They're having a few drinks, you know. And then out of nowhere, all of a sudden, you know, a whole bunch of vampires start attacking the human, and the guy's just fighting for his fucking life, right? All of a sudden, the music fucking stops, and then the human is on the ground, and he just sees two black boots. The camera pans up. It's Wesley fucking Snipes as Blade, baby. And then, like, Edward and Bella are just like, why did the music stop? What's going on? It's like, and they're like, I don't know. Let me look. So fucking Edward goes up to, like, higher ground. He climbs, like, a couch, and he looks up what's going on the other side of the club. And he's like, oh shit, we have to leave. It's like, what are you talking about? We have to leave now. You have no idea. We have to leave. Bella, give my fucking hand. We're leaving now. And all of a sudden, boom, bodies are flying through the fucking floor. Pieces of vampire limbs are landing left and right, slicing and dicing. Blade is just fucking going ham. Shooting up everybody, dude. Shooting up all these fucking vampires. Meanwhile, Bella and fucking Edward are just trying to run for their lives. They were just trying to have a nice, decent date night, dude. They were just trying to have a good time. They walked in, apparently, into the wrong fucking rave, dude. They're having a good time. Free blood coming out of the fucking sprinklers. Nope, not this time, dude. All of a sudden, every fucking vampire is dead except for fucking three people. Bella, Edward, and motherfucking Blade. and then they're trying to escape, but now it's just like Blade's like, hey, what's up? And like, so they're gonna have to square off, dude. And that is where I'm gonna leave the story. Cliffhanger right there. Do they survive the blood rave? Do they survive Blade? We don't know.
Holy, it's gonna be shit.
That was very elaborate, Phil.
Thank you.
Holy God!
That's a survival situation, though. See, I mine is not even close to that. That's...
No, mine was, yeah.
Okay, Wes just like out of breath. I do like the concept of them sort of, like having a night out though, and being like, "Oh, baby, it's fine." You want to go first, Webster?
I'll go. Mine was gonna be Emmett from Twilight, who's like the big buff guy.
Okay. Oh yeah, the isn't he like a brother or no, like cousin or something to Edward?
Yeah, he's his brother. I mean, brother in the air quotes. And I was gonna say a drought, because if there's no water, how is he gonna get his blood protein shakes?
Okay.
Yeah, I was gonna be silly about it, and then you went off of the fucking rails. I think he's gonna survive the drought, but the gains are gonna be a little bit less than before.
Oh no!
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
No.
So it's at a cost.
He loses gains. Okay.
He loses some gains. Yeah, I think so.
Some gains. So you're like, yeah, it's inconveniences really at the end of the day. But he survives.
He survives. Well, he's a vampire. You know, he's not gonna die, but he's just gonna become, you know, slightly less muscly.
Muscly.
Hey, but what about Muse, dude? The super massive black hole.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
that's a gym banger, so he can listen to some Muse and just kind of just
listen to super massive black hole. Yeah.
I know so little about Twilight, Jesus.
I remember that baseball scene. Dude, I've only seen Twilight maybe once in my life, but I do remember that baseball scene.
Yeah, it's fucking iconic, dude. Jesus. Okay. So,
I don't know anything about Twilight. So, excellent. My thing is, maybe Jacob, because the wolves are Mexican or something? Like,
what are they? The wolves are Native American, you fucking idiot!
The wolves are Mexican or something?
The wolves are Mexican or something.
But there is that iconic line where he sort of just says, Bella, oh, where the hell have you been, Loca? Like, yeah. That's a straight up, I don't think that's Native American.
Anyways, the wolves themselves, I guess they find a, like a side hustle in helping migrants across the border. So, in one of the assisting, you know, transportations of these people who really need help. Oh, great. Way to go, Phil, with your fucking No Mercy music right there. Basically, Jacob helps out the crew from Sicario. On the bridge scene.
So it becomes
Benicio versus Jacob showdown on the border.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And then the only way they get out is fucking wolf powers, baby. That's how it gets done.
Holy shit,
my scenario right there. I don't know. Maybe he dies. I'm not sure. It's really hard to come across Benicio del Toro in this point, you know.
Benicio del Toro in Sicario, too, because he's a fucking beast in that movie. Holy shit.
Yeah, exactly.
He comes up to Jacob's like, hermano, do you want to die?
Jacob's like, I don't know what he
said. I'm an emotional wolf.
He survives, but at the cost of the entire cavern of migrants. That's it. He's like, oh, okay, well, bad job on my part. I'm going to report this one back.
Beautiful.
Anyways, continue, please.
Okay, yeah. I finally rate this movie out of 5 internal monologues. Because we got a few in this movie.
Yeah. Mm. Look, I'm trying to put my... the movie did a good job in scaring me, but if I could put my phobia aside... Like, there wasn't very much scary shit going on. I thought Hulu looked pretty fucking sick. The jump scares were expected. It was cool. It was a cool movie. The claustrophobia stuff, I really did, like, I enjoyed the fancy camera work. It was pretty sick. Pretty sick. I really did enjoy the wide lenses that they were placed inside the helmets. I thought that was really cool. However, yeah, just basically what everyone's been saying from like about the movie from Letterboxd and everything, I was like, I kind of have to agree with like this movie was just kind of bland. It started off really interesting, really fucking strong, and I've seen too many tropes. Like, the T.J. Miller character is... You could have put Ryan Reynolds to be the same fucking person. You know, I'm pretty sure he's played that at some point.
Yeah.
You know,
that's a very good point, yeah. You just wanted to watch Deadpool. You're just...
I guess so. That's so weird. I mean, like, if T.J. Miller continued his career, I'm pretty sure we'd all be even more tired of the guy. You know, just how we currently all are tired a little bit of Ryan Reynolds and The Rock and guys like that, you know, because they're just playing the same freaking character. So, like, anyways, but, yeah, the movie itself was cool. Pretty forgettable, though.
Yeah. So what's the rating, Phil?
Yeah.
2.75. Just a little bit below average.
Okay.
All right. That's respectable.
Wait, that's above, below, or above.
2.5 is the middle.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So 2.
No, let's go 2. Let's go 2.75 then.
So okay. That's slightly above average.
There you go.
Okay.
All right. I'm going 2. This is a 2 for me.
Okay.
I just wasn't feeling it. It wasn't for me. There's just too much working against it for the pockets of actual genuinely good work that the whole movie's actually good work. It's not a sloppy movie in any sense of the word. It's very well made. It's just not well made enough to keep my attention. And for 90 minutes, that's like, that should keep my attention the entire fucking way.
Yeah.
So yeah, it just wasn't for me. Unfortunately, it's just one of those that I probably not going to watch it again. And I think it would have been enhanced by a theater experience, but since it happened during a time when that was impossible and it got dumped, this one's chum, baby. I'm sorry. 2.
Damn, chum. Mm. Okay. I'm going to give this a 2.5. Like, it's just a movie to me. Like, it's fun. It's fine. It didn't, like, it was just a movie, and that's okay. It didn't alter my life in any particular way, one way or another, but I did have an enjoyable experience. So for that, I think it is a perfect example of a 2.5. It isn't bad, but it isn't good.
Okay.
I like that. That's a good summation.
I dig it. Yeah, no, there was... there were some things I did enjoy, and it's just I think I'm gonna stick with the 2.75 for me. Yeah,
there you go.
I was not expecting me to like it out of everybody else because I was like kind of curious. I was like, man, I'm probably gonna be the one with the lowest score, and then I'm like, no, turned out that was the
interesting.
That was me.
That was me. All right, guys, let's go ahead and call it here. That was Underwater from 2020. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. Next week, we are talking about a movie that I have never seen and I know nothing about. So, Phil, want to give us a little hint?
Let's see. Well, he ain't no builder, but kind of sort of rhymes with Bob.
Okay, sure.
All right.
Love that.
On the nose there. Also, I'm pretty excited about this one. So, Phil, ooh, it's going to be fun.
Yeah.
It'll be good. All right. Thank you, everyone, so much for listening. If you like what you heard, make sure that you are subscribed wherever you get your podcasts. And you, you write us a review. There's that. All of our plugs. If you want to stay up to date on the latest and greatest on all of our podcast shenanigans, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are on Facebook and Twitter at Horror People Pod, and we are on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORRORBLE People's Podcast. And you can find Anthony on Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler. He is very much enjoying the new Zelda game right now.
Need time.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop. And then you can find Phil on YouTube and Instagram at Phil Acevedo.
Yeah.
And I think that's it for this week. Make sure if you want to listen to any of the other podcasts here on the network, we are part of the Horrible People's Network. You can check those out on Instagram. We are at Horrible People's Network, HORRORBLE People's Network. So there is that as well. Anything else that I missed, guys?
Man, I would love to see this pitch Blade Twilight crossover movie that I just
Down, Phil.
Yeah, I'm gonna write it down.
All right, I think that's it. In the meantime, maybe just never go that far underwater. I don't know.
Very stupid idea. I agree.
Yeah. All right. Bye, guys.
Bye. Later.
See ya.